Because it's me, isn't it?
You're the lead.
Yep. All right. I call this BOE emergency session to order. Cindy, how do we want to start?
James is going to present the abatements that have been written. These are all real estate today.
Okay. James?
Okay.
Which one do you want to start with? We have a short list here in front of us.
Okay. We've got a house that's double assessed. It's 917.
Okay, the first one listed. Okay.
Yeah, it's...
Just double assessed.
Yeah, double assessment. It's assessed on parcel 2373212.
Motion to approve the abatement.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oh, hold on. Discussion?
Cindy showed me some of these, and there was one that was questioned because it was 2 years and they were going to lose assessment.
No, that's not it.
That's not it.
That's not it.
Aye.
Danny said aye. Yeah. Jim aye. There you go. Motion carries.
Did you get the motion in the second, Christy? I didn't.
Yes, it was. Danny made the motion. I seconded it. All right. Next one, James.
934.
And 924 then?
And 924.
All right.
We just, house was lost, locked off the computer system, and we just added it back on and sent them a new bill.
Any motion?
Motion to approve.
All right. I'll second that motion for 924 and 934. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 And we will be sending, now that this is approved, we'll be sending the new bill.
Okay. And then 941. Let me see what you got right here.
Same owner.
It's the same deal, but it's a house had dropped off the computer, but we had added it on back on these.
Okay.
And what it was a split-off parcel
okay.
for 901.
So nothing disappeared. It just got moved around on parcels. Is that
right.
correct?
Right. Cindy? We're actually running it on. We're running it on, the value of 901.
Okay, so you're putting it back on.
Right.
So that abatement of 941 is putting the house back on then. Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So he's adding the house.
Yeah, but these are two different things.
Wait,
can we do
sir?
That?
Yeah.
You've got me just lost just a little bit. So you're adding, is this adding a parcel?
This is adding a parcel, 901, and it's not the house, it's just the land value we're running back on it. We added the house to 9.
And they haven't paid?
No.
I didn't check that.
If they paid, we just can't do it. But
well, that's what I'm saying. If they paid, we can't add that.
And we have to check it on a daily basis.
I didn't check it. I just got this, so I don't know if it was, but I'll check.
So should we go ahead and do you want to? Can you check it while we're in session?
Sure.
Why don't we hold it? James, want to hold 1 second? We have. Are you on the agenda to discuss? Do you know what they are?
I didn't put them on the agenda, but.
Are they one of these cases?
No.
Okay.
No. Maybe you guys will want to hear them, maybe not, but they're not technically on the agenda.
Let's, for the sake of, before we get to, well, let's keep on going and we'll jump on this. So you're going to find out on 941 and let us know, or do we want to go ahead and just do a
motion
pending?
Motion to approve abatement pending.
They haven't paid.
Non-payment.
Okay, second that motion. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. 941 passes. We have 4 left on our list, I think.
945 and 944. House was on the wrong parcel, and one of them is taking it off and adding it to 944.
Is that 943 and 944?
Yeah, it has to be.
943 and 944.
I got 9.
It's not in the same name, even.
That's the difference, is that it goes from a different name, from a trust to an individual. What do you have on the names-wise, James?
Well, I got Mary Debout and Jerry Workman.
Okay, so that is right.
Yeah, Jerry Workman was not supposed to pay on the house, and we moved it over to the Mary Debout property. It's next-door property.
So you have to take...
I'm abating Jerry Workman's off and adding it to Mary Debout over on parcel 12.
Just as a side thing, we also have 943 coming up next, which is the same trust. That's what confuses us.
Yeah.
That's the same property number too, James.
But you have to take it to 0 is what I'm thinking that he's going to say.
No, this is taking the parcel 12 to 0, and adding the house back on.
Yeah.
And it's actually, they combined some lots there.
So we can approve all three of them together.
Yeah, it's all, it works out to taking a house off and adding it back where it belongs.
Motion to approve 943, 944, and 945 abatements.
Second.
Second. Motion to second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Would you like to find out, know what I found out about 941?
Yes.
It's a new parcel, and so there was no bill. This will create a brand new bill.
Gotcha.
And she should have wrote that on there.
Well, it was a split. Just
oh, it's
17.
On the split. Okay.
I want to ask a question before we go any farther, because we're, are you going to send these out with a new bill? Are you going to send those bills with the time of the year?
Overnight?
Some of them will be phone calls. Some people are just waiting to have it corrected.
Okay.
All right. Because
you put it in the mail, they probably aren't going to get it this
week. We'll probably have to call the people. We'll work that out with the collector.
Okay. We have left is 935.
Oh, 935. We've got one.
935 was Faith Life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I accidentally created that add-on when I was making some adjustments. And so this is a clerical thing. We just need to wipe out this bill. It was an error on my part.
Clerical error.
Okay. Now, are you talking about dual billing, dual assessment? What are you going to,
when a new bill was created for them, I put them on as commercial and it should have been residential. And so now I have to fix my error.
Okay. So
it's a clerical error.
It's a clerical error.
So I approved the abatement, but I'm just wondering, you're going to have another one come to us then for
you already did that, right?
Correction?
Yeah.
It's a clerical error. You already have done that.
Okay.
Okay. So we got a motion by Chuck. I'm going to abstain. Go ahead. It's Faith Life Church, I bet.
Okay. All right, I'll second
it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Aye. Motion carries. All right, that is all we have list here. Cindy, can you give us an update on if we want to choose to hear this or not?
As I recall, I talked to you on the phone, and I don't really remember.
For the property taxes for the 2009, we just redid our appraisal, and we got a different appraisal value than the one that was assessed and that we're being taxed on. So
okay. Did they, Cindy, do you know if they went through BOE?
No, they did not.
Did they receive notice?
Of increasement in the taxes or so? No, the only time we actually saw the amount was when we got the tax bill in the mail.
You did not get a notice back in the spring talking about an increase in your assessed valuation?
I don't believe that has anything to do with the case, Bob. I don't think they got an increase. I think they got a new appraisal in November. Did I talk to you on the phone this morning?
Right. Appraisal was done in October.
In October of this year, and it came in less than what we had it appraised.
Was it appraised the same last year?
On my books, yes.
On your books, it was appraised the same last year
as it is this year.
So it didn't go up, so they wouldn't have gotten any notice of increase. Right. And they're just being asked to pay the same taxes that they paid last year, or same, based on the same assessment.
Right, and I think it actually went down.
And what they've done is they've gone out and gotten an appraisal, and it shows that their property is worth less than what you had it on for.
Right, and I've asked them to come in May under a 2010 appeal because of the new year.
The precedent is that they didn't go through BOE.
They didn't go through summer BOE.
So,
and it's based on valuation only.
Okay.
Okay.
So all we're discussing right now is if we're going to hear the case.
Right.
Okay.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
In such a case, payment under protest with the May, is that proper?
Bob?
If they pay under protest and then file an action in the circuit court, they're going to incur some attorney's fees. I'm not telling them not to do that. They can exercise their rights, but the first offense that I would raise would be that they didn't exhaust their administrative remedies by coming through summer BOE and probably would get dismissed. But it may not. So, you know, that's up to them to do and decide to do.
So the discussion is, from legal perspective, we shouldn't hear.
Unless you want to hear everybody who didn't come to summer BOE.
Okay.
They may be right, but they should have come in the summer. You can't sleep on your rights. This is basically what the reason for having to exhaust your administrative remedies is. Otherwise, you open it up to everybody that wants to come in now.
But James?
James,
I think they've got an excellent appraisal that should be heard in 2010. And anyone that of 44,000 properties that would have been appraised in October for this year's tax purposes would not have been the same as they were assessed for.
I mean, that's my thought is they didn't go through BOE, and that's the summer BOE is that's the process. Okay.
So they can do the 2010. Mm-hmm. That's why that was mainly my question.
Yeah, they can pay under protest.
They can pay under protest and come back to us for a refund if their appraisal is.
If they win the circuit court after they pay under protest for this year, and I don't think they're going to get far doing that. But and without hearing the case, obviously there are a whole lot of people that came to summer BOE. If you had an appraisal done in October, their property would show a lot less value than it showed on January 1st of 2009.
Right.
Chuck?
You had a question?
Yes, sir.
Can I just, a couple points, with the summer BOE, being first-time business owners, we were not aware of this, that there is a summer session that goes on for particularly. And the one that we got done in October was recently because the bank required us to get it done as our loan was coming for renewal again. But in 2007, when we originally purchased it, we had an appraisal done, and even at that time, it was at a lower amount than what's been appraised. But again, with being first-time business owners, we're not aware of how the entire process works. And so, but after speaking to other business owners in town, that's how we came to know about that you could go against Board of Equalization and present your case.
Right. Is this a commercial property or residential property?
Commercial.
It's a commercial property. I mean, I'll entertain a motion either way. I'll have a motion to hear or not to hear the case.
Well,
I'm not against hearing it. I don't know where we'll go.
To be fair to every other citizen in the county that had questions whether they should be heard or not, I would vote not to hear the case. I feel for their situation, but
James, were you contacted last year or a year prior to the appraisal price?
Do you remember? No. Not so, that I can remember.
Okay.
Now, they would have been aware of what because they had a closing, of course.
Mm-hmm. And they bought this property in 07?
Yes.
And I don't know what they paid.
Yeah, that's not really.
And that would get into this.
We don't want to get into that.
Like I'm saying, my only deterrent on it is if they use their current economic status to have a current appraisal, there's many other properties out there could do the same thing.
But he said he had an appraisal before, and he didn't do anything with that appraisal either, so.
Well, it was not one of the rules there.
I have no problem if we can give him a few minutes here.
I'll make a motion to Eric then.
I'll second it, and just to let you know, just for the sake of courtesy, you coming here, it doesn't look promising, because I will explain it as a, are we opening a can of worms if
yeah.
I, we
yeah.
are?
Yeah, by hearing it, you're opening a can of worms, because you're basically saying you can come in and be heard after summer BOE when your deadline is. I mean, obviously, as a BOE, you can do what you want, and the courts will determine whether it's legal or not.
But doesn't everybody have that opportunity?
Doesn't everybody have what opportunity?
The opportunity they're taking to come here and ask.
Oh, you can come and ask. But
I mean, we've had a handful, is my point, come and ask to be heard. And the years by that.
Yeah.
I have told approximately, I would say, less than 20 other motel owners that their rights would come next year.
Okay.
At least 20 that said that they wasn't worth what, and I said, I know you're not worth what you was at January 1, and we've got documentation to show you.
All right.
And
I'm going to withdraw my second. So I'm going to.
have a question for James, if I could.
Yes, sir.
In saying that, does that mean that anyone, commercial or residential, is going to be open to come to the BOE in May to look at their, if they have an appraisal?
It's an even numbered year, right?
Right. But
what gives them a right?
They have the right to come in front of the BOE.
In an even numbered year?
Sure. Sure.
How about if they appealed in an odd numbered year?
If they have appealed in an odd numbered year, most commercial properties that appeal in the odd numbered year is not heard to the even numbered year, and the State Tax Commission decision will cover both years.
Still based upon January 1st, 2009 values, is that not correct?
That's correct.
Even in 2010?
Right, but the State Tax Commission has ruled in favor of the even numbered year and not the odd numbered year because the appeal was brought in the even numbered year. I have those but in the past.
Be sure I'm clear. So you said they had a good appraisal from looking at it so far.
I haven't looked. They sent me the appraisal in October. I just thumbed through it. I told these folks that comparables was my importance of whether some appraiser picked true comparables, if you remember the conversation. I didn't go through the operation because I had to give them the deadlines for next year. They needed to contact the county clerk's office before May 15th, get on the agenda for the BOE of 2010.
But could I say something here? They could work with the assessor between now and May 15th. Maybe they wouldn't even have to come before summer BOE. If they give you an appraisal, then
no,
you could make an adjustment?
Not in the even numbered year.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's set, yeah.
But again,
to be a week in here.
You can't lower it
no.
in 2010?
No, I can't.
If the appraisal looks good to you after you've reviewed it, there is hope that they...
Some precedents, you're saying?
My recommendation might come to the board of one way or the other.
Okay.
The 10 would be lowered.
Okay. Danny, you have a motion one way or the other? Chuck's motion died for lack of second.
As I stated before, did my motion not get anywhere when I said because of many other residents that would have that?
Maybe it wasn't clear enough.
Okay, I'll make that motion then that we deny.
I'm going to second the motion to deny. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Bottom line reason is there is an appeal process, and by us hearing your case, we would open and allow everyone to come in the next 3 days and demand a hearing on any appraisal, because the values are set by January 1st of 2009, even though the appraisal is probably a very sound appraisal. It was done in October, and that's why we have to, once again, we hear a lot of cases this summer where people brought in an appraisal in June, July, May and June, and we didn't take it because it was done after the January 1st valuation. So the concern is that if we hear this case, we'd open the 44,000 parcels in the county to hear that case. So like James has stated, you may pay under protest. That's an avenue, correct, Bob?
It is an avenue.
And you could file with the circuit clerk, even though the first thing they're going to say is, did you exhaust all your remedies? And the answer would be no, because you didn't come to the summer BOE process. So... am I say anything out of line?
But they have, let me say this, you have come before this BOE with way more information and have tried to get an appraisal, and you have your appraisal, which we request of people that come before the BOE to have that appraisal, and you already have it done. So those things are, I mean, you tried to do what was right. We just have to follow certain statute regulations. And we're sorry about the way that we have to do things sometimes, but you have brought those forward. And so.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Ms. Adelside. How exactly does EGLE follow for 2010? Because we do have to file taxes for 2010 as well. So
you contact.
Talk to James.
Okay.
Now, the thing is, he was explaining, is that we do valuations on odd number years, correct? So he can't lower it without a BOE action or a State Tax Commission action. Is that correct, James?
That's correct.
For next year, so...
When does summer BOE start, Cindy?
Probably
well, I'm not sure what that new change, but it's around the end of, contact us around the middle of May, but summer BOE starts about the 1st of June.
I've told everyone May 15th, contact the clerk's office.
Is that like the quick area as to when we can see what our taxes would look like that we have to pay in December?
Just as an estimate.
Yes, you'll have an estimate at that point.
If all the levies stay the same, it should be the same next year as it was this year, but the levies may change. The school districts may reduce or increase their levy and the other taxing districts. But if the tax rate stays the same, your taxes will be the same because your assessment isn't going to change unless you
appeal. So about mid-May, you'll have a good estimate, and that will give you enough information. But I would still talk to James about having him make sure you guys sit down and go through the appraisal. So that way he knows if he is going to support or not support the appraisal and the comparables and all that.
Okay, we can file for an appeal on our 2009 payment.
If you just pay under protest, is that the process?
I don't believe they'll be able to get any money back from their 2009 taxes unless they're paid under protest. I don't know that that'll do them any good, as we've said earlier.
But it will hurt them not to do that.
It won't hurt them, and they can consult somebody if they want to see if it's worth filing an action in the circuit court.
Right, so I would say pay under protest, and that gives you the option to go visit with an attorney to see if you want to file a claim at the circuit court level.
And do it legally.
Do it legally, yeah.
Basically, what you have to do is at the time that you pay your taxes, you have to, with that, you have to put down in letter form or, however you want, that you're paying under protest and the reason why you're paying under protest.
Sure. Mr. Shands?
I was just going to say, the collector has a form. You don't just write paid under protest on a check. There's an actual form you must fill out with the parcel number.
Thank you.
Mr. Shands has experienced the paying under protest.
I'm going to do it again. And if they got it today, I was going
to. Okay. And that's going to be the next order of business. Thank you.
We have another parcel that the abatement hasn't been written, but the assessor is going to explain it.
Go ahead.
We have had a problem area over here on a house in Forsyth. We put it on a vacant lot across Swan Creek that belongs to Lida Lane. The problem being it was a remap, the number of the reading where the house should have been all the for 2 years, 5.010. Mrs. Lane property is 5.001. We and the assessor's office corrected this, ask it to be corrected through summer BOE. We even have the documentation where we printed out a form on June 19th that said we had corrected it.
Okay.
But it didn't get done.
So it's a clerical error.
It's a terrible clerical
error.
So the people on 510 came in and paid their tax bill like October 15th again,
okay,
without the house. So Miss Lida Lane got the house put on hers. We need to abate it back whether we move the house or not. It's not Lida Lane's house.
And the taxing district is out the money because of the clerical error.
Because they paid ahead of time.
And we put the house on then for 2010 where it belongs. We thought we had this all done during BOE, and like I say, we've got the documentation to show we thought we had it done. We even printed out the document on June 16th, 17th, 18th, something like that, showing that it was corrected.
But clerical error, we have to do that. Correct, Bob?
I mean, you have to do that. Basically, with a clerical error, you're able to hear it at this point to clear up a clerical error. The problem with this clerical error is that you're going to reduce the amount of money that the taxing district is going to receive. Either you're going to do that or you're going to make somebody pay more than they should have had to pay because somebody made an error at either the assessor or the clerk's office.
I'm going to move that we write and approve the abatement to remove this house off that parcel. That's my motion.
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. So we're abating Lida Lane's to land.
Abated, we write the abatement and approve the abatement is what we just did.
I've got another question, though.
Yes.
Is this, James, didn't they pay weight taxes? Are they looking for a refund on 08 tax?
No, on 08 taxes, yeah. Their trust paid it.
Yeah,
there's no way.
The same mistake happened in 2008, and Mr. Lane passed away in 2008, and the trustees paid it, not thinking that it was normal.
Are they asking for 2008?
They are not asking for that, to my knowledge.
So they're just asking for 2009.
Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. They are aware that they paid for 2008 and that they would like a refund, yes.
You can't give them 2008 without being possibly sued by the school district, and you're going to have to pay them their money. You can't do that.
Well, I understand that. Do we need a motion for that to deny the 2008 request?
If they've made a request, you need to deny it.
I move that we deny the request for 2008 refund regarding this parcel of Lida Lane and the trust. Is that worded properly? Do we have a motion? A second?
I second it.
Okay. Any more discussion?
So, you're saying we can't do that?
No, it was paid, and it wasn't paid under protest.
So you can't do it.
Once it's paid, they're done.
How? Refunds that we've done. I mean, we've done refunds. How have we done that?
I don't know. How have you? I mean, once they're done, you're not supposed to go back and refund anything in a prior tax year where someone has paid their taxes. They're held to know what their situation is and what their taxes are. And it's as much their mistake as anybody's mistake if they pay and they don't pay under protest their taxes. It's not even considered a mistaken payment.
Any more questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? You aying or are you against it?
Yeah, I'm against.
Opposed? He says aye, so motion carries 2-1. Is that it?
No, I want a specific copy of this document. This one really confused me, and I don't know how it got missed again. And our computer room don't either.
Yeah, this did not come before summer BOE.
No.
We've checked it. And so it's not something that we failed to do.
Okay.
It didn't come before summer BOE.
You made the correction.
I made the correction on June 19th, and why it didn't get in the BOE book and corrected and the correct time, I don't have a clue. The computer room don't have a clue. But
we're still talking about the lane issue.
Yeah. Okay. We have less... Is Kennecuck the next on the agenda?
That's it.
All right. So the request is classification. Is that correct?
Yes, to be made exempt. I emailed you the documents if anybody needs.
No,
so you would have already looked at these. There's six parcels that they're saying should be made exempt. They were transferred to the nonprofit entity in December of last year.
So December of 08, they were transferred into the entity.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't, okay.
They did not get an increase notice according to our records. I don't know how that occurred.
And this is an evaluation issue anyway, even though he said in the documents that he didn't realize it was going to be a 12% increase or he would have started talking to us earlier. Really, he's
discussing.
That's what's motivated him. I think if it hadn't been a 12% increase, perhaps he wouldn't be here. But he is here now, talking about exemption,
okay.
Which is different than evaluation issue.
Right. So we can hear this.
Right.
We should hear this.
Basically, what it was is when it was all transferred over, it was split. Some parcels went down, some parcels went up. So the total 12% increase is a reflection of some parcels going up. Considerable amount in the splitting of the mapping,
okay.
Versus some went actually that piece was whittled away from went down.
Okay.
So that's diagrammed here of a minus plus minus plus.
Okay.
But they did not receive an increase notice that I can find.
Do we need to have Mr. Frank come up and speak to us? And you want to do that, or we want to?
Do we need a motion to hear it first?
Probably wouldn't hurt, would it?
Probably wouldn't hurt.
Go ahead.
I'll make a motion for
to hear
your Kennecuck's case.
Second that. All those in favor say aye.
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 And there's
hold on. Aye or?
I'll aye because I'm going to ask a question.
Okay, so and motion carries to hear.
And there's two different reasons. They didn't get a notice.
Okay.
And they did get an increase, and this is an exemption issue and not a valuation.
Okay, that's gotcha. All right. So, James, why don't you dig in, and then we'll start from there. We can hear from Don first here. Go ahead, Don.
Okay. Thank you for hearing me at this late date. I'm sure you had other plans for today. Appreciate that. Let me give you just a little bit of background first as to why we're here, to help you kind of put things into context. I realize Kanakut Camps, although it's one of the larger employers in the county, isn't well known and can often lead to confusion, and that's because of the properties are private. There's not a lot of advertising. We're somewhat on roads you don't see us very well. We're not very well recognizable. So some people have to wonder, just what is it? What do we do there? What is all that about? So if you don't mind, let me give you a little background. Maybe that'll help you understand how we're here today. The camps started in 26. Mr. Spike White, Joe's daddy, worked there in the 30s and 40s. Mr. White bought the camps in the 50s, operated them. Joe took over in the 70s. And the intention was for the White family to hand over the operation to the next generation, Cooper White, Joe's son, who's now 26. Cooper decided he didn't want to do that 2 years ago. So at that point, Joe decided that he'd go ahead and transfer the ownership of the whole operation to a nonprofit so that it could sustain itself through a board instead of ownership. It's been a family-run ministry all those years. So last year, early, we prepared to move all the assets into a 501c3 that we had already organized about 10 years earlier. Effective last December, the White family donated all the equipment, all the structures, all the cash, assets, operation, everything into the 501c3. The only thing that they kept, and this was just kind of a matter of security, is they kept the land that was under it. And the purpose for them keeping the land was twofold. One, to ensure that if the nonprofit board, whoever it may be in the future, decides to go a different direction, that the ministry, that they would at least have some security of an income. So they executed a 50-year land lease between the land that they own and all the Kanakut nonprofits. Obviously, 50 years will extend past their life. They're both in their 60s. In their will, they just turned the land over to the nonprofit. So the separation intention was purely to give them some security in case the board decided they're no longer part of the ministry in the future. That's the reason they donated all of the improvements and not the land underneath it. The Whites are from Texas. And they have seen where universities in Texas, TCU or SMU, both of them have lost their Christian values and have become secular universities. So it's eminent on their mind that nonprofit boards can take a ministry and lose its salt, if you will, by going to a secular operation. So that's the reason that they executed this transaction. We obviously, at the base of any nonprofit, has to be avoiding private annulment. As you probably are well aware, Bob knows, no individual can gain from transactions in nonprofits, and we have to be very careful of that. So the nonprofit meets all the IRS codes. We are a religious organization, and when all these assets were changed on December, I think, 18th last year, we realized there could be some confusion. Stone County did not send us a change for our assets in Stone County. When we got the bill from them 3 weeks ago, we notified them immediately. They read the quitclaim deeds wrong, and they converted everything into the nonprofit, the land and the improvements, and they weren't going to charge any taxes. So I called them right away, and said, no, that's not right. You have to charge us taxes on the land, but not the improvements. So they made the adjustment. And then when we got the bill here, I said, well, it must be the same thing, some confusion. So I called 2 weeks ago, came over and met with James, and said the same thing. I said, I realize it could be confusing to separate improvements from the land. James felt that, he's always felt that we should, he didn't agree, so here we are. Now, what can I do to add to that?
I have a couple questions.
Sure, Bob.
First of all, you're claiming an exemption under what category?
I'm sorry?
Under what category are you claiming?
Religious.
Religious organizations.
Correct.
Okay, because it's totally distinct from charitable organization. Those are
correct.
Two different things.
Right.
Okay. And you're familiar with the requirements are different than, say, just being a 501c3 to receive a religious exemption in Missouri.
That's correct. And that's why I gave you documentations that not only from the federal government, from the state of Missouri.
I understand. Those are your tax exempt.
Right.
But that's different than for property. For property in Missouri, I'll just read from this. The religious worship exemption covers all property not held for private or corporate profit and used exclusively for religious worship. Where's the statute? The statute is 137.100.5. It says all property, real and personal, actually and regularly used exclusively for religious worship, for schools and colleges, or for purposes purely charitable and not held for private or corporate profit, except that the exemption herein granted does not include real property not actually used or occupied for the purpose of the organization but held or used as investment, even though the income or rentals received therefrom is used wholly for religious, educational, or charitable purposes. They've held that some retirement homes for bishops, for example, of a church are not exempt. There's a whole lot of case law on religious exemptions that says just because it's owned by the religious organization doesn't necessarily make it exempt, even though it's exempt by the federal government and the state government on its sales tax and all that.
Right.
I guess what I'm asking specifically is how you meet the religious exemption. If you're not claiming charitable and you're claiming religious, how is it that the property is actually used that meets the standards of used exclusively for, let me read it again, I'm sorry. Actually and regularly used exclusively for religious worship.
Right, okay. Well, so you have to get into, again, what are we all about? And if our mission statement is to evangelize and equip the next generation for Christ. That's our underwriting mission. Okay, you can go to our website and see that. What we do in that nonprofit and all the nonprofits that are there are simply that. We evangelize to kids, bring them to Christ. We train them up to be the Christian leaders for the next generation. Obviously, worship is part of that. Every kid that comes to our camp experiences a worship relationship. Each camp has a chapel, indoor chapel and an outdoor chapel. We have a chapel on the property for the community to use called the Neighborhood Chapel. We have weddings and other events there. The sole purpose of the organization is to meet that mission, and all of its assets are committed to that, personnel, equipment, real estate, anything that we have. So the same mission statement that a church would have would be to evangelize. We're evangelism.
The profits from the, or the monies realized from the operation of the camps goes back into the camps.
Sure. Yeah, that's what I said.
And the worship.
That's correct. There's no private inurement. Can't be, or we wouldn't be exempt by IRS standards.
Well, I understand that, but it takes a little bit more for real estate than that. There's no, I mean,
right.
For instance, a charitable organization that's completely charitable, if they take their charitable money and give it to the religious organization for religious purposes, that for the religion that owns the property that the charitable organization is taking place on is not exempt because that money's not being put back into that charitable purpose.
Right.
It's being given to the, even though it's a religious situation, it's being given to the religion. The money's for the religious organization that owns the camp is going back into the camp and back into those religious activities to further the exclusive use of, yes. of worship and that sort of thing on the property. I guess what it would come down to is the property being used exclusively for worship and prayer and that sort of thing, and whether you're all convinced of that, and that's a factual situation for you all. How the property's used and whether you believe...
So we have to determine the usage. The state doesn't do that when they issue...
The state doesn't do anything concerning the real estate unless somebody appeals from here. What he's given us is, correct me if I'm wrong, you can say exactly what you gave me, gave us, but it's like sales tax exemptions from the state, being able to claim themselves as a religious organization and being tax exempt with the IRS, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the real estate. And you've got to use the real estate statutes in Missouri. For instance, if they didn't believe in a supreme being, under a Missouri Supreme Court case where the L. Ron Hubbard's group, Scientology,
sure.
They were found not to be a religious purposes because they don't believe in a supreme being. So it requires belief in a supreme being, which I don't think we have a problem with that here, but there's all kinds of things that have to do with real estate that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the IRS and the state sales tax.
Well, let me see if I understand you, Bob. In order to conduct our activities, obviously all the improvements have to be part of our mission. So are you seeing the land? Help me understand. I mean, obviously we have to have the improvements and structures to carry out what we do. So are you looking at the land thinking differently?
No, it's just whether the land is being exclusively, and the case law has been a little bit liberal with the word exclusively, and it may be more like predominantly. You'd have to look at all the different cases, but, I mean, for worship purposes. Yeah. I mean, just because worship takes place there doesn't necessarily make it exclusively for worship.
Right.
For instance, you could have a building that you use for something else 5 days out of the week, and 2 days out of the week you hold the... You know, Wednesday night you have
True.
A prayer meeting and Sunday you have church services, but 5 days a week right. you could be doing something totally different.
I understand that. But I think you'd have to say that I can say, and under anybody's investigation, everything we do is focused on that. That's the sole purpose. Now, this sounds similar. We had a similar discussion, I think, about 5 years ago. Public schools, everything they do are exclusively not in education. They serve meals and they recreate and they play on the playgrounds and they do other things that are non-educational, but it's deemed to be educational, obviously. Same thing with us. Kids don't come here just to sit and read the Bible all day or we wouldn't have anybody. Everything we do is either Christian training through athletics or everything we do has the same thought process through it. Now, it may look like sports or something to you, but we're teaching them how to be the best athlete with Christian values. So, from the outside, you may say it's not a worship service. The conclusion is kids come to Christ. So the Bible and everything we do is the value system.
Let me just say that used exclusively under the case law refers to primary and inherent use as against mere secondary and incidental use. And for purposes of taxation, a religious motive may be of some significance in determining whether use of a facility is for purposes purely charitable. Basically, what I'm trying to do is give them what the law is and what they have to make as a factual determination, and then they make that factual determination. I'm not saying it's
Sure.
one way or another. Here it says the words are used exclusively relating to property used exclusively for religious worship. have reference to primary inherent use is over a mere secondary and incidental use, and if incidental use does not interrupt exclusive occupation of property for exempted use, but dovetails into or rounds out these purposes, then property is used exclusively for exempted purposes. And that's from Midwest Bible and Missionary Institute versus Sestrick. It's a 1953 case. There's a YWCA case versus Bauman that says that the fact that they were an association charged for meals prepared by girls in training for cooking and waitress work did not prevent its exemption from taxation, since such charge was incident to and a part of such training, you know, even though they were claiming the religious purposes. So, I mean, basically it comes down to a factual determination whether you believe that it's used exclusively for religious purpose, and that is not the only use. It's the inherent or primary. And if the incidental use that's not worship dovetails into, under this case, or rounds out those purposes, then the property is used exclusively for the exempted purposes. And it's a factual determination for you based upon what you view as the use of the property. And if you feel you've heard enough from him about what the property is used for to make that determination, or if you feel that you need more information, that's up to you. But I've done my part.
Okay. James, you want to have a few words?
I basically have always been opposed to the exemption for Kennecott Camp because of various things. I think if I asked Don today, is the camp even open today to the public?
I'm sorry?
Is it open today as we sit here today?
No.
It is controlled away from the public. Exemptions fall under... it's supposed to serve an indefinite number of people at any time.
Well, that's under charity, not religious, correct?
Correct.
All right.
So it came as a charitable organization last time of donations coming in to one of the Camp Kauai or something, and was helping subsidize the parents that came there.
Well, that's why I specifically asked him today was what he was coming under. I think he said religious
and then
organization.
Another thing I wanted to get into is Assemblies of God owns the building, White River Complex, operates out of that complex, but they don't get a total of tax exemption for religious purposes. They get a 3/7 exemption because of their religious worship days. They actually have those days of worship, Bible study, Sunday school, and I don't know where Ron Hershen came up with the extra day, but he throwed in a 3/7 exemption, and Assemblies of God was pleased with it. Chuck had a sign at the end of T Highway one time that was right beside a church. A gentleman owned that sign and the church. They came for exemption on the church when it was just a lease to the church, and they were taxed for that properties just because that was, and they were 100% church used properties. All these cases just points for a non-exemption. Is there going to be any difference in an operation? And should, if it all goes back into the camp, wouldn't that mean a huge decrease in people's fees to go to this camp? Prior to, it was supporting a corporation and the individuals that paid income tax against it. So now that it's not, all the monies are just used to pour back into the camp, are we going to see a huge reduction in fees? I think on a piece of paper right there, I think Don gave me a number of $20 million as being the revenue stream of Kennecott Camps, the entirety. So what are we going to do with $20 million if we have to get it spent to form our 501(c)(3)s or whatever, buy more property and ask for it to be exempt off the tax rolls? What are you going to do with that $20 million unless your fees drop? John Danforth wrote the only Attorney General's opinion on some of this, and he said exclusively meant exclusively, and he wrote it in 1978. I have it in my office. He doesn't go into the liberal type situation that Bob read, but I do know what Bob read is fact. It's always there in front of the assessor on what should be exempt as religious purposes and what should not be exempt. And Bob actually beat me on a case, and he's always gloated over that. So I want that on record.
Yes.
But that's the questions I've always had about Kennecott camps. I've talked to Don. He's tried to answer to my satisfaction of what would be, and to this day it's not been answered for me where they should receive a exemption, especially with private individuals owning the land underneath.
How does that have an effect if a private individual owns the property? Isn't their use just leasing it, whoever they lease it to, for the 50 years? But then the leasehold, the improvements on the property, are those the property of the lessee?
Back to Chuck's church. The individual that owned the property where the church was at the end of TI Way, that was leased back to the church. It was never exempted for its usage because it was all privately.
Well, for instance,
why wasn't it, James? I mean, that was before my time here.
Because a private individual was
getting... it was used exclusively for worship.
And when they left, you could describe that church as being an improvement to that man's property. He has since sold it.
Well, it was a house originally.
But they added on to it, yeah.
But if I own the first...
And they leased it to the church.
Right.
And the church used it exclusively. Why wouldn't it been, while it was a exclusive church, why wasn't it exempted?
Because it was donating back to that gentleman as an individual in a corporation. You cannot form any corporate profit.
It was donating what to him?
He got the building. He didn't lose no money by leasing to the church. It was his building because it was on his land. And it actually contributed back.
But my understanding is it's the use. And it would, when it was a house, it would be taxed as a house. If he made it a business, he'd be taxed as a business. When it became a church,
Chuck,
that was its exclusive worship.
What's the use, though? If I own the land at the first, and I'm playing both sides against the middle here, but if I owned the land that the First Baptist Church in Branson was on, and I leased it to them for $10,000 a month, what would be the use of that property? It doesn't matter what they're using the property for. The use is, as the owner, I'm leasing it for $10,000 a month. Whether I lease it to a church or a business, I'm using it to lease to people for $10,000 a month.
It seems like you're talking out of both sides. You're saying it's the use of the property, and it's exclusively worship, but it's still taxed. Now, my sign that I rented, that was a commercial sign. I mean, he had to pay tax on the sign.
But it was on the church parking lot, wasn't it? I mean, it was right there.
Yeah, it was on the church property.
Parked all over, yeah.
But that was a commercial, and that kind of relates to your tri-lakes. It just seems like we're...
I think we're steady as a rock on it. What this does to prevent is... James Strahan from leasing his property to a church to come out on Sunday afternoons and walk around and look at the birds and the bees and the beautiful creations of God and worship and then declare it exempt from taxation. And it can be done right here through this same paperwork.
But that's, I mean, this VOE's decision I'm hearing is it used for religious purposes?
So really, that's what our determination is.
And that, what you described, would not, I couldn't vote for that.
Because
you could go to a state park and do the same thing, or a national park and do the same thing. That's not what this is.
Go ahead, Bob.
Do you believe that it's used exclusively for worship purposes? And whether exclusively is the John Danforth's opinion of exclusively means exclusively, or if the inherent primary use is worship purposes and the other incidental uses dovetail, whichever definition you choose to use, is this a property that's used for religious purposes? And I think you've got to look at both the person or entity that is leasing the property as well as the one that is leasing it to them. I have questions here. Does it make a difference if they lease it to the not-for-profit for $1 a month, or if they're making a huge profit off it and it really doesn't matter who they're leasing it to? Does that matter?
Does that make a difference? Maybe it does. And is it being used exclusively for worship purposes? And who do you measure the use by? Whether the tenant is using it for exclusively worship purposes, or is the owner, who's responsible to pay the taxes, is he using it exclusively for worship purposes? I have a lot of questions. I'm not saying that. I just have questions.
Sure.
And I'm trying to.
Right, Don, you want to say something?
Let me address a couple of things that James mentioned. Okay. And we talked about this this converted theater that's now a church. I guess they came to that formula based on revenue. I can only assume, because I think they have non-religious events there, don't they? Lease it out for theater purposes or
Tri-Lakes.
Something. Tri-Lakes, is that what they do there?
No, they basically had lots of things, Don. That's just like going on a canoeing trip that Kennicott does all the time. Where does that fit in religious worship or religious use? And that's part of the packages, I understand. You guys do lots of things, great things. Don't get me wrong, great things. But I can't figure where, if it's under a Christian umbrella, I would hope that we're all under that same umbrella in what we do and what we do when we play and when we do these things.
Right.
But we're not. Some of us are not, I'm supposing. But I don't believe that gives an exemption to property to be under that umbrella.
Well, all right, let me... our property is not... we don't invite the public in. It's just like a college, Christian college. You sign up to be. We don't sell our services to the public. You can't buy a cup of coffee. You can't stay a night. You can't do anything there unless you're enrolled as an attendee. A Christian college is an example of how we're shaping ourselves with our endowment strategies and our nonprofit strategies going forward. As far as the use... we're not in camp right now, but the 12,000 kids that go through our camps, we're in contact every week with. So these camp directors and their assistants, they're on phone calls, letter writing, emailing, discipling these kids year-round. You don't see that because the camp is closed, but that's the intention. You can't change a life to come to Christ by just coming to camp for 2 or 3 weeks. Some do, but that is not the intention. The full intention here is evangelism and bring kids to Christ, develop leaders. So worship has to be part of it. It may not be the kind of worship that you're thinking where you come to a church with a steeple. But in all of our literature, everything we print, all the materials that are distributed to these kids, every phone call, everything is about discipling those kids to Christ.
Have you actually looked at this and religious is the one that you is your best shot rather than schools and colleges or charitable? That's your best shot?
We're filed as religious with the state of Missouri. So okay. Whether we change going forward or not, you know, we do have one of our nonprofits is a graduate program. You can get your graduate degree there. We're affiliated with the university in Arkansas.
John Brown University.
Brown, thank you. Down in Silent Springs, you can get a master's degree over at K Institute that's housed in our facility on the Lakeshore Drive. So we are structured, now that we are all nonprofit, we're structuring ourselves like a Christian university, only we reach kids from age 7 until 24 as they graduate. So every dollar in a nonprofit, though, James, has to be spent to its mission and cannot benefit anybody privately. Joe's wage is less than my wage, if that helps you with anything. The rent money that he gets off of this, he usually gives it all back. It's just really a security for the future in case for someday he's voted out of office by a board.
Okay. Does that satisfy all the questions that I was going to ask, if those are made in the public want to speak? Bobby, if you come up to the microphone. Don, if you would just let Bob speak for a second here.
Danny, still go.
Oh, Danny, I'm sorry. As you're coming, Bob, go ahead, Danny.
Well, I had a couple of questions. Don, you came before us
probably four.
3 years ago, I believe. And what happened was you came to us and actually had a graft
that you showed five.
Yes.
And I believe at that time it was under charitable, right?
I honestly don't remember.
Okay, and under those five, you transferred one of those because four non-for-profits and one profit.
At that time,
the way you had that set up. So are you reconstructing everything from that point? I mean, everything's totally different than what you came to before the BOE and requested at that point.
Yeah, well, what's different is that, at that time, Kanakuk Camps was family-run, sub-S. And we, being the largest entity with the most employees, we supplied services to the other nonprofits, accounting and IT services and so on and so forth. That's all been rolled into one nonprofit now.
So you're not taking the four and the one. You're rolling it all together.
Yeah, those are future steps to roll into one, but not at this time. I still have those four independent nonprofits, and then the Kanakuk Camps is rolled into Kanakuk Ministries. And the reason, by the way, in case you're wondering why we have several nonprofits, the reason it's that way is each of those were started by a camp director who came up with a better concept of ministry to reach kids. So he would fund them, donate to it, create their own nonprofit. We'd support them with accounting services, IT, mechanical, whatever. And then but he wants each of those presidents to wake up every day knowing they have to go out and raise money for that ministry. So that's the reason you see those. And he challenges them. He said, if you can fund it financially, then that ministry can grow. If you can't, then it won't. It'll die. Now, we've never lost one, but that's the purpose for spawning off nonprofits.
So that's one of the questions that I had was the fact that you had came before us with a structured way you wanted to do this, and I think at that time received approval with many questions from all of the BOE, which consisted of a commission at that time. Another thing that was mentioned there a while ago that was brought up in that session that hasn't been brought up today was the people that come to stay at your camp, if a parents come to see the visit their children or something,
right.
They are charged a motel fee, right?
Yeah. That camp,
that was a controversial
right.
Issue that right. came out before us.
And James brought that up again 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that is true. If you enroll your family to come to family camp and you have a grandparent who wants to come, we have four motel rooms that the grandparent can pay a fee and stay in, but they can't stay there unless the family's enrolled. It's not okay. available to the public.
It was a controversial issue that we dealt with or 4 years ago.
Right. So the family of five enrolls at family camp, but they want their grandparents to come also, then we make a room available for them.
Now, Bob, this goes to question to you. This does not even apply to the religious exemption. This applied to the non-charitable, right? The question that was discussed extensively about the involvement of grandparents coming and staying and being charged, or parents coming and staying. At that time, I think it was parents also. But does that totally exclude that from that what he's requesting now?
We seem to be mixing at times religious exemption with
charitable
exemption.
That's where I want to separate it, and that's what I'm trying to do.
I want to tell you I had a half an hour head start on this, as you well know.
Yeah, okay. Okay,
okay.
Jim, I'm trying to come back, and we had a long discussion about this last time.
So this request is, if we deem this a religious organization, not a charitable organization, this is all if we deem it a religious organization, right?
Sure.
All right. Bob, if you want to come up.
Thank you. The question, I heard $20 million somewhere is mentioned. Is that how much is taken in a year from the campers? Okay. And James, how much assessed valuation is in question here in the fees that Canacook is not wanting to pay?
Bob, I haven't added that up. It's right. Don would have, yeah, okay. That's probably right. I quoted one time 35 or 40,000, I think, when Don was in my office.
For a camp that wants, at one time I think you wanted to block Lakeshore Drive and bypass it around because you had property on the other side of the street and it was dangerous to walk. I've got pictures that a former commissioner had authorized Taney County to go there and cut trees on your property, and I don't know where they are today, but I give me a month, I can find them. You've gotten a lot of work out of Taney County, roads, work, and $35,000, my God. It seems what you're getting out of the people from Taney County, if you give me $20 million, I'll give you $70,000. I'll double the amount. I think you ought to pay something, even if it is religious.
Okay.
If I can just make a point, I didn't say anything
that's fine. Thank
earlier,
you. Thank
but you. Taxpayers who aren't the applicant generally don't have standing to complain. Even I think at this point, the school district and others don't have the ability sure. to do what Mr. Shantz just did.
Okay, you should have helped me. I'm new to this whole chair thing, so all right. You sure can, and then we need to come to a decision.
It is $20 million a year. Every dime goes back to employ the 100, and when you take all the nonprofits together, there's 200 full-time. If you convert the seasonal employees that come through us, there's 350 full-time equivalent employees involved. It is the third largest employer in the county. Every dollar that we take in is spent here. If we're able to effectively raise money through contributions out of the 12,000 campers all over the country and raise money here, all that money comes here. It's our intention to completely diversify the money that comes in so that we're stronger in the future. We always intend to stay in the Branson area. So if we're able to raise twice that or whatever we can raise in the future, that's money spent here. We don't distribute it anywhere else. So,
thank you, Don. Gentlemen, any more discussion?
Just a comment. In listening, sent my daughter to church camp, we called it, mm-hmm. this last summer. And it cost us a fee of $100, let's say. And I don't know, but I assume that church camp was owned by a denomination mm-hmm. and was exempt. Mm-hmm. And as I've listened through all this, it seems that Canacook, although they for many, many years did not go after this exemption. My daughter's been to their camp. I've been there with nephews and different things. And it fits the religious to the hilt.
Right.
For whatever, 3 months a year, every day.
Right.
Not 2 or 3 days a week, but every day it's used for, well, as the mission says, I see it fits myself.
Danny, any last comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
No, I don't have any comment.
I'll make a motion to grant the request, which is for the improvements of the Canacook camps, as he's already showed James, and the land will stay private, taxable ownership, if I understood that correct.
Is that correct? In the motion, you're asking for the improvements to be tax exempt.
That's correct.
I'm going to second the motion. Any more discussion?
You would just like the name of the minister on the church down there.
Yes, sir. We start with Joe. He's an ordained preacher.
For the church.
For our ministry. But there are ministries outside of the church.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Is there any other BOE work to be done? All right, then call BOE.
Make motion to recess in case another emergency comes.
Yeah,
would that be appropriate?
That's true.
Somebody could open their.
That's good. We'll recess until the end of the year, or until before then. That's it.